get up now, get up out of bed. Wash your face, brush your teeth. You're listening to Because I Said So, and our topic today is a little serious, suicide. Nobody really wants to talk about it, but our guests today say it must be talked about. We're going to talk to some people from the Worcester County Youth Suicide Awareness and Prevention Program. They have great information for all you people out there. You're listening to Because I Said So, and unfortunately, we're too short today. It's Kim and I, Jenny. You know, Kathy and Jackie, they've got some illnesses going on, so we don't really want them to give them to us. So we're going to, you know, have them stay at home. but we are also joined in the studio. We have Hope Hatura Green. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right, Hope?
Yes.
And Ron Pilling, and they are with the Worcester County Youth Suicide Awareness and Prevention Program. Also, the umbrella organization over that is the Jesse Klump Memorial Fund. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
And obviously, you all out there listening know that we're going to be talking about youth suicide, and I think it's important to have as a topic on our show because of what I've heard in the news, and it's very alarming. But you know, we were talking earlier, and Ron, you had said there's since last September 12 youth suicides in Delaware alone.
That's correct.
Is that shocking? Is that too many?
It's way off the chart, Jenny. Way too high. The bulk of them were concentrated in one high school, Delaware Tech in Dover. I'm going to guess it should be 5, 6, 7 times what the average you would expect from a state like Delaware.
Well, and I guess, you know, I don't mean to jump right in, but I do because the same school, something's going on there, don't you think? I mean,
well, there are suicide pacts at schools where kids agree to do this en masse. There are, of course, copycat suicides. Schools are prepared for this. Guidance counseling officers are prepared to deal with this. If there's one death like this, the immediate thought is, what do we do to prevent more from happening?
Well, and this is, I think, such an important topic to talk about because it's one of those topics where you think we shouldn't talk about this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, parents have those feelings that, well, I don't want to give my kids any ideas, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to plant any seeds. And this is one of those topics where we have to talk about this.
Or not my child. No, everything's fine. Is that what you hear?
No, that's absolutely, that's one of the biggest myths that you'll come across of anytime people mention suicide. They're afraid of, oh my goodness, am I going to put that thought into a child's head? And there are research studies, and you will never put that thought into a child's head. If you think about it, if a child's already thinking about suicide, they're already thinking about suicide. And if you begin that conversation, you're simply opening the door, and they can actually feel relief that, oh my goodness, there's someone who actually understands and I can talk about it. Mm-hmm. And research found that it's not the question of should we talk about suicide, it's the question of how do we talk about suicide. Mm-hmm. So we're at a place where we know we need to talk about this issue, but it's how do we approach this issue.
And you came to be involved in this organization because of one individual, Jesse Klump.
Because of one individual, you're right. When I retired and moved down here, never in a million years did I think I'd be spending the bulk of my waking hours working on youth suicide. It was just something that was so far from my experience, so far from my history. It's just so unimaginable. Jesse and I worked together. As I said, Jenny, probably my last job at the Pocomoke River Canoe Company in Snow Hill, and probably Jesse's first. He was 14 when he came to work for us, and I worked with Jess Summers until the summer before he took his own life, which was in February of 2009. He was a great kid.
He was 17 years old
17.
When he took his life.
Yep, I've told people countless times if I had had a son, except for those last few moments, I would have wanted him to be just like Jesse.
Well, now that you can look back, though, you worked with him. So, did you see him deteriorating, or what did you see?
You know, one of the problems of dealing with a suicide, with a death by suicide, is this constant question of yourself. Why didn't I see it? What could I have seen? Jesse was a very clever young man. Virtually no warning signs, and believe me, I know the warning signs. If you woke me up in the middle of the night now, I can rattle them off one right after another.
I'm sure.
Jess was a straight-A student. He was a talented athlete. He ran track and field. His track times hadn't suffered. No drug, alcohol, substance abuse issues, no girlfriend problems. His family was very supportive, a family that he was raised to understand that his future was going to be in community service. And he was very secretive about his intention until near to the very end.
You know, I have unfortunately had some personal contacts also, or personal experiences with suicide. And, you know, it's really surprising to me that, of course, we always ask, and you do always go back and ask yourself, what did I miss? How did I not know this? How did we not see this coming? And, you know, kids are, they can be very good at hiding the signs. So again, it's just another reason for us to talk about it, right? So that we can help children and youth understand that there are other ways to handle whatever's going on in your life. And there are people out there that are supportive and can help, even when the thoughts that you're having seem crazy and unimaginable, you know.
Well, that's what, you know, he's a straight-A student. He was a great athlete, you know. I think that sometimes people assume that it's really the kids who have a challenging life that might be more apt to take their own lives. But that's not the case.
No, not at all. It's suicide doesn't discriminate. Mm. You know, people automatically think, oh, you know, you want to label a category of this type of person is suicidal. And at the end of the day, you know, I always say you can't judge a book by its cover. I know it's a cliche, but you can't look at someone and know what they're going through, what they've been through. The only way to truly know is to ask someone what is going on. And I believe in being completely preventative in speaking to your children about suicide. If you ask, with all the suicides that happened in Delaware, third graders were coming to school at one school talking about suicide. At third grade, they wanted to know what it was. They were aware of it. So begin speaking about suicide. Actually, say the word suicide. Be direct. Say, you know, killing yourself, killing oneself, not harming oneself, but being direct and being preventative in having that conversation when they're younger. And then that opens the door if they ever get to a place that they know this is a topic that is not off the table. That if I ever get those thoughts, then I can go to my mom or I can go to my dad if you begin that conversation when they're younger.
I have a third grader.
I do.
And it makes me think about it. And you know, when is the appropriate time to talk about it? Anytime, I guess.
And it's an ongoing conversation. It's not, you know, okay, I've had the suicide talk.
Right.
Now I can kind of get on with my life. It's an open door, open invitation that if this ever comes up, you know, come to me. And a lot of times you'll find that it might not even be your own child, but you'll come in contact with it through your child knows a friend who is suicidal. Uh-huh. And that's a lot of times how people come in contact with suicide, because what do you do then?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, often it's not the parent. Kim Klump, our president, and I talked to school bus drivers this year, to all the school bus drivers in Worcester County. School bus drivers are in a particularly interesting place. They see in their rearview mirror what goes on. The first people who are representatives of the Board of Education to see a kid during in the morning, and maybe the last person who represents the school to see him during the at the end of the day.
Right.
I talked to the AARP in Ocean City not too long ago, and of course they're all grandparents. The bulk of them were grandparents, and it elicited a whole lot of questions and comments. And the most common comment was, "My grandchildren would tell me stuff they'd never tell their parents."
Wow.
So the relationship between a grandparent and a child can be, in this case, as critical or more critical than the parental relationship.
That is very interesting. We have much more to learn from Ron and Hope, so we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back because there's definitely more to talk about. We are back because I said so, and Kim and I, Jenny, are here with Ron Pilling and Hope Hatira Green, who are with the Worcester County Youth Suicide Awareness and Prevention Program. And, you know, just talking in the break, why do we need an organization like you here on the show? Unfortunately, we do. But now, fortunately, you are here and you are doing proactive things to help our youth. Is it worse here on the shore than it is other areas? What are we dealing with here locally?
Nationally, Jenny, suicide in general, not necessarily youth suicide, the rates are higher in states that are rural in nature, rather than states that are urban or suburban in nature. So you'll find, for instance, the rate, and when I talk about rate, I'm talking about the number of loss of deaths due to suicide per 100,000 residents. You'll find the rates higher in places like Colorado and Wyoming than it would be in New Jersey, New York, Ohio, or even Maryland. But within a state like Maryland, and Maryland does remarkably well. I've got the data sitting in front of me. In 2010, the Maryland state rate was 8.7 deaths by suicide per 100,000 residents. The national rate was 11.3. Overall, the state does remarkably well. But if you look a little deeper, you'll find that the rates are higher in rural counties than they are in urban or suburban counties. While that overall rate for the state was 8.7 per 100,000 in Worcester County, for example, it's 11.7 for the same period. Among young people, the national rate was 7.3. By young people, we're talking about people under the age of 24.
Okay.
The state rate is lower, 6.5, but the county rate is higher, higher than both the state and the national rates.
Yeah.
And the thing to remember about this data is that it's usually understated. For the authorities to declare something a suicide, they're looking for a note or they're looking for a pretty credible witness to say it was so-and-so's intention to do so. Lacking those things, they're going to declare it an accidental death and not a death by one's own hand.
So, even if all the signs kind of point to it being a suicide.
Yes. I mean, the authorities have to label it somehow, and that's their criteria. So rural areas higher, that certainly is Worcester, Somerset, Wacomico. If you look at the state rates over a longer period of time, you'll always find Washington County near the top, Dorchester County near the top. Strange enough, in 2010, I think Easton had the highest, Talbot County had the highest suicide rates in the state of Maryland. But very typical, and our patterns here are no different than patterns anywhere else in the nation.
Why do you think that is? Why rural areas more than,
there are a number of reasons.
Not enough to do? I really don't understand it.
That's not one of the reasons it comes up, though it may well be. People in rural areas, well, first, let's take a step back.
Uh-huh.
If one is bound and determined to take his or her own life, the most surefire way to do it is with a firearm. And firearm ownership, proliferation of firearms, is much higher in rural areas than it is in urban areas. That's one reason.
Mm-hmm.
People in areas like we live, rural areas, tend to be more fiercely independent, say, than people who live in the city. There's a stigma. We've talked about stigma surrounding suicide, but there's also stigma surrounding mental health that are maybe a little more traditional here than they would be in Baltimore, Washington, or even the suburbs of those two cities. People more reluctant to seek mental health services. And of course, the common denominator of suicide is clinical depression.
Right.
And in some areas, it's just more difficult to come by mental health services. It's more difficult to get there. So I think that's a great deal of the reason.
That makes sense. It really does. I mean, I think about access to those services here on the shore.
That's the key word. That's exactly what I was going to say. There was a study, which I find fascinating, that they did, I believe, in the 1950s, 1960s. I believe it was in England. And I might go back a little bit farther than that, but they said it came down to, I don't know if you've ever heard people say, you know, go ahead, stick your head in the oven, that kind of saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually goes back to suicide. People would literally stick their head into this oven because everyone had this oven in their house because of the carbon dioxide that's in it. And then people would literally die by sticking their head in the oven. So what they went and did, the engineers changed the design of the oven,
mm-hmm.
and took away that component,
mm-hmm.
and automatically it decreased the percentage of deaths by suicide, decreased by 26% simply because of access.
Yeah.
And in regards to access of firearms, this is the scary part. Teens, yes, typically die by suicide by firearms or by hanging. The firearms tend to be one of the parents. Studies show it's between 70 to 80% that it was one of the parents.
Firearms.
And yes. Mm-hmm. So it was a firearm that was owned by mom or dad, mm-hmm. in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they dug a little deeper, and they went and they asked the parents, you know, does your child know where the firearm is? Parents said no. Then they went and they asked the children, do you know where the firearm is? Yes. Some had gone and picked up the gun, played with the gun. So it's serious to know that if you have guns in your house or any sort of lethal means, it needs to be locked up in a designated place. You know, the key has to be somewhere where the child does not know. You know, if you can get one of the locks now that they have where you can, it's hand censored, where it can read your fingerprints, that it can only open when dad opens it or mom opens it, that's the best, one of the best ways to limit it. Because what they find with youth suicide in comparison to adult suicide, youth suicide tends to be more impulsive, where an adult might think about it a little bit more and it's more planned out. But
well, they're young minds. They're young minds. And they know how to be impulsive. They haven't learned yet how to really sit down and really think it out.
Mm-hmm. Tell us.
No, that's true. One example I use in talks often, when I was in high school, lo these many years ago, a friend of mine, he was a bit of a class clown, got caught in class with a Playboy magazine. Right, a Playboy magazine. Now, you and I know that is not the end of the world.
Right.
But to Jimmy, it wasn't. He went home and put a shotgun in his mouth.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, he survived. Somehow he survived and went on to have a sterling career in data processing. But a Playboy magazine. You know, I can see him passing around under the desk with the centerfold open for his friends. But he went to the principal and said, we're going to have to suspend you. We're going to have to tell your parents about it.
And he couldn't think of any other thing to do than to take a gun to
his... He was 17 years old.
Oh,
you don't have that long-term perspective. You don't have the life experiences that somebody older has.
Right. Tell us more about your program. And I know you said you speak to different, like, school bus drivers, and you're speaking to AARP. But tell us what your program is doing.
Yes, I say we are a little bit over a year old of our program, and we will go out and we will speak to anyone in the community. Where there's a community gathering of maybe five people, we're willing to come out there and teach. Our ultimate goal is to teach what are the warning signs of suicide. And when you recognize those warning signs, what are the appropriate steps to take?
Mm-hmm.
I like to use the metaphor or the analogy of CPR. You know, a lot of people, we all need to know the warning signs of a heart attack or a stroke, you know, of CPR. So we need to recognize it, because we never know when someone will have a heart attack. You never know when someone around you is suicidal. So we need to know what are those warning signs, and when we recognize it, what are the appropriate steps to take. So that's our ultimate goal, to educate everyone at large, the community at large. We'll come to community organizations. We're working at getting into the school systems, where we train all of the school staff. What that means is bus drivers, cafeteria workers, teachers, principals, anyone who coaches, anyone who comes in contact with a child. Then we want to get to the students, because
that's what I was just going to say.
They know before we know.
Yeah.
But the important thing is to train in a sequence. You need to train the adults first, because you can imagine if a child is suicidal, you're vulnerable, and you go to an adult and they don't handle it appropriately.
Yeah.
Right. I can never go talk to anyone else about this again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to work in that sequence. So we want to train everyone in the community, adults, kids, everyone that we can, to recognize what are these warning signs and what do I do when it happens.
Well, we're going to come back soon, because we want to know what the warning signs are and what steps to take, because there's right things to do and probably not so right things to do when it comes to suicide. We'll be right back. Can't believe the show is almost over. We still have one more segment, and we've got a lot of information to share. We're talking with Ron Pilling and Hope Hatira-Green from the Worcester County Youth and Suicide Awareness and Prevention Program. And we ended our last segment with, you know, the importance of your organization and teaching people what the warning signs are of a suicidal youth, and then the steps to take. So please enlighten us, because we all need to know.
One of the easiest ways to remember the warning signs is the acronym IS-PATH-WARM. So IS-PATH-WARM. The I is for ideation. It's thinking about suicide, writing about it, talking about it. The key, though, is with talking about it, writing about it, it might be indirect. It's not necessarily a person is going to come out and say, I'm going to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
It might be, I can't take this anymore. No one cares about me. I just wish I wouldn't wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be direct or indirect. So thinking about it, writing about it, talking about it, drawing about it for younger kids. So that's the I. The S is substance abuse. Substance abuse is found in many suicides. It tends to be a big factor. And that can be an increase, a decrease. It could be a change in the substance. So if a person is typically just using alcohol and now they begin to transition into other drugs, that can be a warning sign. the sense of purposelessness, feelings, purposelessness, being trapped, being hopeless. Hopelessness is huge. They found 90% of people who die by suicide felt hopeless. If you think about life without hope, you know, there's the saying out there, life without hope is no life at all.
Mm-hmm.
So having that hopelessness is a huge red flag. Feeling anxiety, feeling agitated, feeling angry, feeling worthless, and a sudden mood change. And what I want to be clear about this, because a lot of people think, oh, you'll notice that they're all of a sudden being like really melancholy, really sad, kind of falls off, which is absolutely true. Being withdrawn, absolutely, that's all part of it. It can also be when a person who has typically been a bit more melancholy all of a sudden gets happy or seems a little bit, you know, upbeat. And a lot of people think, oh, this person's getting better. They're coming out of their depression or they're coming out of whatever was going on. When in reality, it can be a warning sign that a person has a plan in place and they see an end in sight.
Oh.
And a lot of times that's what suicide is. Suicide becomes a way to end a person's pain. You know, person gets tunnel vision that this is the only way that I can make this pain stop.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times there's a belief in most situations, suicide is not about death. Suicide is making whatever pain, psychological, emotional pain is going on in your life, making that pain end.
I see. I understand that. It's I think a lot of people maybe may think it's death, but mm-hmm. you're right. And especially in youth, mm-hmm. they don't really think that it's maybe death. They just want the pain to go away.
No, and all of these symptoms are something that every parent has probably seen in their kids at one time or
uh-huh.
another, and they've written it off as, it's a phase. He or she'll get over it. Oh, it's just teen angst. Oh, I went through the same thing. I'll outgrow it. You need to be much more aware today, perhaps, than parents even were 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, there's a lot more going on out there mm-hmm. that our kids are exposed to, and that's probably a reason why. So if you see these signs, what do you do?
First step is ask someone. Be there for them. If you're comfortable with that, be there for that person. I use the acronyms because I like to make it simple to remember. So is PATH, WARM is the warning signs, and then I use the acronym of ASK. A is ask. Simply ask somebody directly. It sounds like you're going through a lot, you know, or sometimes when people are experiencing what you're going through, a person considers suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? So ask the person directly. The S, A-S-K, S is stay with the person. You stay with the person and you listen. That's the key. Don't judge the person. Don't tell them not to feel that way. Don't tell them, especially a teen, your life will get better. This is the best time of your life. Those are actually some of the worst things that you can say to someone because you're minimizing what they're going through. You're negating them. You're invalidating them. And they're saying, you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So the first is ask a person. Then stay with the person. And the only time you wouldn't stay with them if it's a threat to yourself. So you stay with the person and you listen. You say, tell me more. You know, it sounds like a lot. Just empathize with the person.
Do you have a plan?
Yes. Ask a person if they're suicidal. Ask if they have a plan. Ask if they've ever actually tried, because a person will actually begin to walk through the stages if they get that close, if they have access to it. You know, so if a person has a plan, do you have that access? So then it makes it imminent danger
uh-huh.
that we need to get immediate help. And then you want to, the K is connect them with someone who can help. Because our role, people's role in the community is not to be the counselor. People's role is to be a support person, recognize the signs, be there to love on the person, and then connect them with someone who's clinically trained
right.
to do an assessment. So the last stage is connect them. Connect them with a mental health worker, connect them with a psychiatrist, even their family doctor, but they need to get a full-blown evaluation where then they can get connected with treatment. Because the great part is that with suicide, they find that 90% of people who die by suicide have a diagnosable, possibly untreated mental illness, typically depression. Great part about depression is it's treatable
mm-hmm.
and people can be healed from it. So if we can recognize those, we can help people.
So let's say that I am talking with a student. I ask them, they have a plan. I stay with them. It's just me. There's not another adult around. I want to connect them, but what do I do? What do I literally do when I'm with that child? Do I take them somewhere? Do I call someone? What do you recommend?
In the case of a school bus driver, a live story that we heard, the school bus driver, the schools, of course, have protocol for this. He called the guidance counselor at the school, called the guidance office, and he took the young person who was at risk directly back to the school.
Oh.
There are 1-800-873-TALK is the National Suicide Line. Here in Wacomico County, you have the Crisis Response. It's not what it's called.
Life
What's
crisis.
It called? The Life Crisis. Crisis Center. Outstanding organization. They have a 24/7 hotline. There's a new chat line. It's not 24/7 in the state of Maryland yet, but will shortly be 24/7. Again, listen, and empathize. You know, it's a lot harder being a teenager today than it was when I was a teenager. You know, I can see you're in pain. I can see you're hurting, and I can understand why. Don't minimize it. Don't say, man up.
No. You know? Well, in some instances, I just want to throw a quick question in here. What if they say, no, I'm not thinking of suicide, you know, like, and the response is negative and you're not getting anywhere, even though you still think something's going on, and they're denying it to you. Like, they don't want to talk to you then.
I don't think that's the case, generally.
Really?
I went to a workshop in Delaware not too long ago, and a guidance counselor spoke, and he said that in his experience, if he has a child in his office whom he believes is suicidal, if he asks the question, he said, you can see the kid open up. He said the stress rising off their shoulders is almost palpable.
Good.
A year or so ago, Kim Klump and I went to an all-day suicide prevention workshop in Ocean City. A young man, one of the few people who's ever jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived, spoke. And he said, if just somebody had come up and smiled and said, can I help you? If anybody had made any effort at all, the day that he made the jump, he wouldn't have done it.
Wow.
Just one person expressing the slightest bit of care or concern.
That's powerful.
Well, and I know we're running out of time, but I also think that if you ask a child and you're not getting any response, that don't keep that information to yourself. If you really feel like something's not right, then share it with a parent if you can, or a teacher, or someone who is in contact with that child, so that others can then also be aware.
Right. Don't keep the secret.
You have a scholarship. I mean, I know that we still had 2 points we wanted to make, that you have support groups, too, for family members of who they've lost a family member to suicide.
We do. Grieving from a suicide loss is a great deal different. We've touched on it already. Than grieving from a poor choice of words is a more natural death.
Yeah.
There is extraordinary amount of guilt that goes along with it to the survivors. Why didn't I see it coming? How could I have stopped it? It's much more difficult to get over. Mm-hmm. So we hold monthly in Berlin, the third Wednesday of every month, as a matter of fact, in the health department next to Atlantic General Hospital. We have support group meetings for people who have had difficulty overcoming their grief, people who have finally decided, I can't do this by myself. And it's hosted by our president, Kim Klump, who's trained to facilitate these meetings, and by a member of the Worcester County Health Department's crisis response team.
That's great.
The stories that we hear, Jenny, are heartbreaking and heartrending.
Mm-hmm.
And the comments we get, you know, when I realized that I could not get through this, I spoke with Kim, and I could never have survived if it hadn't been for her careful listening and her encouragement and the opportunity to speak and to meet people who are going through the same thing that I'm going through. This part of our mission is the part that has given us the most short-term reward and satisfaction.
Certainly. But you also have a scholarship, real quickly?
Right. We were founded as a scholarship. Within weeks of Jesse's death, Kim had started the Jesse Klump Memorial Scholarship by opening a bank account in that same name. And our initial mission was to provide a scholarship to a graduate of Snow Hill High School every year who did reasonably well in the classroom. Mm-hmm. We don't ask for much. We ask for a 3.0.
Yeah.
But more important, had demonstrated the character traits that Jesse had. Compassion, caring for others, a dedication to making the world a better place. After Jesse passed on, I knew he was a good kid.
Yeah.
You know? But people would come into the canoe shop and they'd say, when my mother was in the hospital, Jesse came to the house every day to see if we needed groceries.
Oh, my
gosh. You know, when my parents were getting divorced, Jesse was the best friend I had. You know, I knew he was a good kid, but I didn't know he was that good,
yeah.
You know?
So now you celebrate who he was through this scholarship.
We do. And for the past 2 years, I'm very proud to say we've given a scholarship valued at $12,000.
That's great.
A substantial amount of money.
That is fantastic. Well,
more is nice, the best night of the year for me.
Yeah. Ron and Hope, thank you so much. You've enlightened us all, and I think people now are armed with the knowledge to know what to do when this happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
You've been listening to Because I Said So, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. For more information, including podcasts of this episode, visit us online at becauseisaidsoradio.com. Thanks to Anita Renfro for allowing us to use her song Momisms as our theme song. And be sure to like us on Facebook. Look for the lady with the red hot lips.
I said so, I said so, I said so, I said so. I'm the mom, the mom, the mom, the mom.